Today is August 27th, 2014. This is episode number 269 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, Managing Editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, Pogo Stuntmaster. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at acm@macobserver.com.
I had no idea that that Stuntmaster was a level you could achieve.
You didn't know about my Pogo world record?
No, but I probably should have.
I've said too much, really. I probably shouldn't have revealed even that.
Well, hold on. I'm doing a quick Google search here. And, oh my. Brian, I had no idea. Wow.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, so, wow.
Right? You know, maybe I should tweet about it.
Yeah. And don't include the pictures.
No, because that would be saying too much. But you can find me on Twitter at TMO Brian. It's Brian with a Y.
And you can find me on Twitter. I'm J Gamet. And I do not have any Pogo records to share.
Yes, of course. Yes. Yes, because I am the Pogo Stuntmaster. Now, speaking of Stuntmasters,
I can't wait to see where this is going.
We have China.
I need to stop laughing at things like that. I only encourage you.
It's true. So, you know, it's over the weekend, got a little juice to a story about how China's going to, it's going to make an, they're going to, the some government organization within China is backing development of a quote unquote homegrown operating system to essentially compete with Windows and OS X and then later Android and iOS.
You know, good for them deciding that they're going to start from scratch and home roll this operating system from the very base levels of the code all the way up. Good for them.
Yeah, of course they're actually starting with Linux.
Yeah, how about that?
So you know, it. So China is going to develop a homegrown OS by starting with an OS that was started elsewhere. So, you know, so much for national pride. Now, admittedly, Linux makes a fine start, I suppose. There are a jillion versions of Linux out there, and not one of which has ever been anything close to a mainstream success.
Now, I'm wondering if they're planning on taking a Linux distro and rebuilding the framework in that to create their own truly unique operating system, or if what they're really doing is skinning Linux.
I suspect they're going to skin it. We don't actually know. So this report came from, we should thank you just right now, since we're delving into Chinese stuff again, we should thank the guy who wrote us with the pronunciation.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
I'm looking for that. I'm stalling for time because I'm looking for the email.
And I'm not going to touch my keyboard because we have established it's very loud.
It's true.
But yeah, the link teaching us how to pronounce everything that's difficult to say, primarily meaning company names.
Where'd that come to?
Well, it came into...
Because I'm not seeing it in my Apple Context Machine folder.
Did he send it to... Well, I'm not sure which address it went
to. Oh, you know what? I think it went to the Geek Gab.
That's right. It went to the Geek Gab. And luckily, we know those guys. So it made it on to us, too.
It made it to us, too. Now I have to find it. Because I'm... This is ridiculous. This is just so ridiculous.
It's all right. Well, we'll have the interns edit this part out. No one will ever know, and it'll be great. But in the meantime, having a resource so that we can learn how to pronounce tech company names and not sound like we are suffering from a stroke, or in my case, like you learned how to speak in Missouri, it's a wonderful thing to have. So thank you.
It is, in fact, a wonderful thing to have. What the
Isn't heck? It great that we're always so prepared that we have something like this set up and ready to go so that when we start talking about
Yes, it is, in fact. So here we go. I found it. Oh, my goodness. So it's from Greg, who mentioned you want to know how to pronounce the... I'm cheating, going to the end... So leave out the show me, right? Show me, right. So Greg told us. Thank you so much. So now, Greg, you can correct me on this too, because we have the Chinese publication, state-owned publication, which I think is Jinhao.
See, I'm not even going to try and say it so that I don't do it wrong.
Yeah, because, you know, we only need one of us embarrassing us.
Right. And it's your turn this week.
So, state-owned Jinhao. It's always my turn. State-owned Jinhao is talking about a state.
Why is that always about you? What's up with that?
Because I'm the one who's willing to embarrass myself.
All right, I can't argue with that.
So, Jinhao is talking about a government ministry. Which name of that ministry is? Let's see if I included it in my. Piece, which it looks
the
like
the ministry of skinning operating systems.
Yes, something to that effect. And we don't have a lot of details on exactly what they're doing, but they did give us a time frame. They intend to release this in October. It's an initial release.
So October of 2014.
Correct. And within 2 years, they expect it to be able to go to be a suitable OS X or Windows replacement within 2 years. You know, never mind, of course, the incredible number of years and man years, the incredible number of man years that have gone into development of both Windows and OS X. Never mind that.
Yeah, but to be fair, China has a lot of men and women. A lot. And okay. So if they work in tandem... Yeah. Then that's a lot of hours.
Yeah, that's true. But my problem, my skepticism here actually stems from the fact that China does not have a legacy of inventive innovation. And if
not for a while.
If you want to, not for a while. Once upon a time, China was inventing everything, paper, new gunpowder, which is pretty much everything. A lot of philosophy, there are all kinds of machines. And I've been watching shows on the History Channel and History 2 about some of the incredible war machines that were invented in China and some of the water devices that were invented in China. But today's China doesn't seem to be focused on innovating so much as copying.
Well, I suppose from at least some perspectives, copying it is faster and requires fewer resources.
Yeah, a lot fewer. And it takes less talent and fewer ideas, too. So it is possible that they could copy their way into something that's a viable Windows or OS X competitor in 2 years. I call it very extraordinarily doubtful.
Well, here's what I see out of this. And it's that in 2 years, they could have an operating system that they are pushing really hard onto their businesses and to their citizens. And they can make it an alternative to OS X or Windows. Not necessarily a viable alternative, but an alternative, simply because the government has so much power that they can just say, this is what you're using now.
That's true. China could put up regulatory walls, a great regulatory wall, protection. Do you see what I did there?
Great. Yes.
Regulatory.
I totally saw what you did there, but I wasn't going to laugh because I would encourage you.
put up protectionist means of artificially boosting the demand for a homegrown operating system. The problem is that actually won't encourage innovation, although it could bring more money to bear on development. And I just, yeah, I don't think a lot's going to come out of this, but we should also talk about the reasons why they're doing it.
Yeah. And I'm sure a big part of this is because they feel like on some level they are giving up control over their technology to other countries, and in some cases countries that they don't feel like they can really trust,
i.e. the U.S.
That would be us. Yes.
My take is that the Chinese government wants to limit the spying on its own people to itself.
That's kind of selfish.
Yeah, it is kind of selfish. But China has publicly accused both Apple and Microsoft of either, you know, willing or unwilling help with the NSA and spying on Chinese citizens. I doubt both. Actually, I doubt both very strongly. And
so
it's
do I.
It's unclear if that is a propaganda move that is simply part of the war of words that is going back and forth between China and the U.S. Over espionage allegations from both sides, or if China actually feels that way. It's impossible. I think it's impossible for us on the outside to understand that.
You know, at the end of the day, it probably doesn't matter if China believes it or is using it as posturing, because the end result is the same. They wanted some kind of excuse that they could present that would be easily digested. And geez, you know, basically the United States handed him that on a silver platter.
Yes, by the NSA's belief that it should spy everywhere that it can, regardless of the consequences or value of that surveillance. This is, you know, I said this when the story first broke. This is going to result in a lot of development dollars, a lot of business being pulled away from U.S. companies and put into local resources, and this is. This is precisely one example of that. But in addition to the political and propaganda front, we've also got the economic front. Because right now, Western, as you already said, Jeff, Western companies, Google, Microsoft, and Apple in particular, are dominating China's technology, at least indirectly. Of course, a lot of that domination actually goes hand in hand with piracy. Because there's an enormous sure. amount of piracy within China, but China can't like that from both a national pride standpoint, and China has plenty of that in spades,
mm-hmm.
Or has that in spades. I guess I don't need to be redundant. And from a future competitive standpoint, China doesn't want to be dominated by Western companies. But the flip side of that coin is that China can sort of hold its marketplace, you know, as a sort of Damocles over the head of the U.S. in these ongoing political and propaganda battles.
I have to stop you for a second. I want to give you a compliment right now on your use of sort of Damocles. That was fantastic.
Oh, thank you.
Nicely done.
Thank you. Because, you know, Western companies right now are looking to China for a lot of growth. As China comes up out of, you know, with its rising middle class and its growing economic clout and an economy that is going to be the world's largest economy sooner rather than later, if it's actually, it may have may possibly have recently happened. I can't remember, but it's either recently happened or it's about to happen. With all of those things going on, Western companies want access to that market. And when it comes to the U.S. penalizing Chinese companies for what they say is help with Chinese espionage, China can push back and start trying to keep Western companies from growing as part of its own threat.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of political maneuvering happening in all of this, too.
Yeah, it's extraordinarily complex. There is a lot going on to this, but I think that the one thing that ain't going to happen is that they're going to have an operating system that is truly, truly competitive with Windows or OS 10 within 2 years or 10 years.
I just can't imagine that happening. I mean, look at the number of years Apple and Microsoft have been working on these operating systems. You can't catch up in that game that quickly.
No, you can't, unless, of course, you just rip off wholesale.
Right, and then that's not what China said, or that's not China's stated goal.
It's not China's stated goal. So we're going to see what happens there. It's an interesting development, and it goes to show, again, how Apple has grown so much that it is a true pawn in the global game of politics, the global Game of Thrones.
I guess that's a sign of success when when you're now a pawn in political maneuvering.
Yeah, it is a sign of success, and it's an unfortunate sign of success. But it's true for any very successful company successful on a global scale. That company will become a tool of international politics.
Yeah. All right, Michael Dell, what do you think? Time for Apple to sell its stock and give the money back to the shareholders?
Oh, Michael Dell, we only say that because we don't love you.
Yeah.
So wearables.
Yeah. You wrote an interesting piece today about wearables, where it was Recode, right? That said,
yes,
that the September 9th media event, which is still not officially announced, is going to give us the new iPhone and the iWatch, or whatever wearable device it is that Apple's going to introduce.
Yeah, so it's, I don't know how to pronounce his name. I guess I need Polish speakers to help me with this one. John Pikowski is probably what it is.
Probably. Just John. Just go
with
John.
He is a veteran journalist. He was with the Wall Street Journal. He was with the All Things D team. And then when Kara Swisher and Walt Mossberg left or were kicked out of the Wall Street Journal, depending on how you want to look at it, and formed Recode, John went with them. And he writes a column called Code Red, which is, you know, just sort of a rumor roundup, usually based on his sources versus just something he's repeating. Mm-hmm. And he's usually very accurate. He's, you know, he's the real deal. He's the real deal when it comes to journalism. And when John says something, I tend to listen to it personally.
Well, and Recode is a pretty reputable source for information.
Yeah, Kara Swisher and Walt Mossberg have been doing a fantastic job there, just as they did with All Things D. Mm-hmm. So anyway, he says he was the one that broke the September 9th media event, that Apple would be having this media event on September 9th. He's the one that broke that. It was followed up by, I think the next day, the Wall Street Journal confirmed it, and either Reuters or Bloomberg, one of the two, and I think it was probably Bloomberg, but
I think it was Bloomberg.
They confirmed it too. We still haven't gotten a yep from my friend Jim Dalrymple.
No, we haven't.
Actually, I'm gonna check right now to see if.
Wouldn't that be kind of fun if he just yepped?
He didn't yep. Yep.
All right. So we
or still, nope.
Yeah, we have no yep, and we have no nope.
Yeah. But that said, like I said, when John Bukowski says something like this, his track record is it becomes true. So he says that Apple will unveil its wearable alongside the two new iPhones on September 9th.
Okay, so that means that if John is right, that these reports that the iWatch is supposedly delayed and won't be coming out till next year would be wrong.
Yes. We've had a mishmash of rumors on this. We've had people saying that it was going to come out this fall. We've had astute analysis saying, looking at how Phil Schiller and Tim Cook have both talked about how, I think in Eddie Q too, but have talked about how they've got the best product lineup ever for this fall. You know, and so we have both leaks and analysis saying that Apple was going to introduce it this fall, right?
Right.
And then we have some of these, I called them hedge analysts, and I don't mean that as in hedge fund. I, you know, think hedge witch, who have been saying that Apple has got some kind of problem and is having to push it off till 2015.
Well, I've been thinking that that Apple's wearable product line would launch ahead of the holiday buying season this year. And it's nice to see Recode saying just that.
Yeah, and so the hedge, the analysts who have been saying that this thing is going to be delayed have been basing that on leaks from the supply chain. And the interesting thing there is how well, Tim Cook warned analysts explicitly not to draw too many conclusions from specific bits of Apple's supply chain simply because Apple's supply chain has become so incredibly large.
Right. And reports that Apple is delaying the iWatch are most likely coming directly from the supply chain.
Yeah, they've all been coming from the supply chain.
Yeah, and if they're basing that on the fact that Apple hasn't placed big Sapphire orders, well, that's probably because Apple doesn't need to place big Sapphire orders.
Well, okay, let's come back to the Sapphire thing in a bit. Let's actually look. Let's compare Pukowski's. Mr. Pukowski's story to a supply chain leak. There are some things I think that can be accurately gleaned from the supply chain. For instance, Apple is testing something.
Mm-hmm.
If the supply chain says Apple is testing something, it's probably true.
Sure, and it may not be a completed product that they're testing. It might be components or materials.
Correct. Exactly. And what the supply chain thinks that Apple is using those materials for may not actually be what Apple is doing. Now, you did a piece looking at some rumors that Apple was working on a 12.9-inch iPad, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same thing, right? That's coming from the supply chain?
It's coming from the supply chain. Yes. Well, and that's the assumption. It's insider sources that they're being vague, but my assumption is they're talking with supply chain people.
Okay, that makes sense. And again, it's as you noted in your piece. Yeah, duh. Apple's testing us. Doesn't mean Apple's going to release it.
Right.
But it's interesting to even know it does. It is helpful to know even what Apple is testing, because what Apple is testing means that it becomes a possible future Apple product.
Right. And well, even if it doesn't become a future Apple product, it's very possible that elements of what they're testing will be spun out and put into other products.
Yes, it's true. And Apple has been vastly increasing its R&D expenditures too. So, you know, the company is working on a lot of different things. But what we have here is a source telling Mr. Pukowski that Apple is going to be doing something in a media event, and that is a leak slash source of a much different caliber than what the supply chain knows.
Right.
And accordingly, I put a lot of stock in it. Is that the right?
Sure.
Is that the right phrase I'm going to use there? Yeah, I put a lot of stock into this particular report, and I think that it's quite possible. I'll note, by the way, that Mr. Pekowski used the word wearable, didn't call it an iWatch once.
Which is very interesting.
May or may not mean anything.
Right, but still, it's interesting.
It is interesting. And because we know that Apple registered iWatch, of course, they could have registered iWatch as a red herring.
Sure. They also registered or mentioned the name in some documents, legal documents, for iTime.
iTime, yep. Yep, I've seen recent iTime stuff.
Right. And but, yeah, there's nothing to say that we are looking at a watch device. It could be anything. And, well, a couple days ago, I speculated on the possibility of Apple creating a line of sensors that attach to specially designed clothing and shoes and stuff.
Yeah, but to be fair, I think you're wrong.
Well, you're welcome to your wrong opinion.
This moment of jackassery was brought to you by me. So,
and your pogo stick.
Yeah, pogo stick. Can you imagine the heft of a pogo stick necessary to support me?
Well, I'm assuming if you compete professionally, as you do.
Yes.
That it's all the highest end space age materials, and it's incredibly durable and incredibly light.
Yeah, it's made of unobtainium.
Yeah. So this cost a lot.
They do. Let's look at Sapphire. Speaking of unobtainium, there have been a lot of mixed reports on Sapphire lately, and one of them is that Apple can't get enough, or that Apple has had problems with Sapphire, or it turns out that it's too expensive, and so Apple back in June was scrambling for redesigned screens because the Sapphire wasn't going to work, and I'm not buying any of it.
I'm with you.
I think we're going to see some Sapphire either in the watch or the phone. I suspect both.
I suspect both as well. And I think all this talk about Apple isn't getting enough Sapphire is coming from people that are looking at supply chain, where Apple isn't ordering it because they don't need to.
Okay, to be fair, those same folks watch GT Advanced very closely. And remember that GT Advanced, so GT Advanced is, I think it's GT Advanced Technologies is the actual name of the company. They tend to be called GT Advanced for short, and that's what we'll do. GT Advanced is the company that Apple brought into its Arizona plant. And so Apple bought this huge, massive manufacturing complex that was empty in Arizona. I think it's outside Mesa, Arizona. And part of that space, but only part of that space, is going to GT Advanced, where GT Advanced will be operating Sapphire furnaces that Apple owns, because this is what Apple does. When Apple comes up with a new manufacturing technique or a new material that they want to use, the company buys the equipment, leases the space, and then hires, and then partners with companies, with expert companies, to actually run it. But Apple owns the stuff.
Right.
This gives Apple complete control over what's being made with that stuff, so that they can plan accordingly. This is part of Apple's secret sauce. Not even secret. Apple's has made this known a long time ago. So that's what's happening in Arizona. GT Advanced is making Sapphire with thousands of furnaces that are being set up there. But GT Advanced does still have to report that business because it's a public company. So Apple may or may not be ordering Sapphire in the open market, but that anything that they're ordering from GT Advanced should be showing up somewhere on GT Advanced's P&Ls.
Well, remember the piece I wrote a couple weeks ago about how GT Advanced has all of this this money that's sitting as unclaimed
right now? Yes.
Which, based on everything else that analysts have been able to ferret out of the company, the only thing it can be is Sapphire that they've been stockpiling.
Right, which may or may not be, first of all, Apple's, and secondly, enough to fill Apple's actual needs for the tens of millions of iPhones and maybe 10 million iWatches that Apple's going to be making here in these last few months of the year.
Right.
And that's the part that we don't know. But I don't think it's quite fair to say that Apple's not ordering in the open market, so therefore they're wrong, because they are looking at what GT Advance is doing as well. But I think that it is extraordinarily fair to say that you should not be drawing absolute conclusions based on what you can see in the market, because, again, Apple's supply chain is so very complex, especially its supply chain for Sapphire, because of its relationship with GT Advanced.
Right. And yeah, we are, like everyone else, trying to build a tapestry out of a few threads. It's just, I think the threads that you and I are choosing are of a higher quality.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that we're better at putting the pieces together, quite frankly. I'll happily pat us on the back for that. So now, there's another factor here, and I know that we've mentioned it before, but I think that it's worth exploring again.
Okay.
And that is how we're recording this on Wednesday, August 27th. Mm-hmm. Now, Apple hasn't announced its media event, but I'm at 100% that Apple's going to invite folks to a September 9th media event. That's 12 days away, less than a fortnight.
I love that you chose to say Fortnite.
Yeah, I know. I did it on purpose because I'm kind of obnoxious that way. When Apple is going to release a product, how long have we been getting leaked backs and screens and even complete prototypes and dummies? And even completed units for a new iPhone. How long have we been seeing those in the rumor mill?
Quite a while now.
2 months, I think.
Yeah.
Several
weeks, couple months. Yeah.
That's about right. And we were saying at the time, it's like, okay, we've reached the point now where this is traditionally we start seeing the leaked bits and they end up being accurate.
And there they are.
Now, we haven't seen anything for an iWatch.
No, we haven't seen anything.
Not a thing. No case, no strap, no logic board, no screen, no Sapphire, no screenshots, nothing. And if this were an iPhone that was going to be released in 2 weeks, we should have been seeing that stuff 2 months ago, just like we did with the iPhone.
Right. And there's nothing.
There's nothing. So that means one of two things. Apple's not about to release it and is not yet making it. Or, as what I think is the case, and again, I know we said this, but we're going to talk about it in a little more detail, Apple is making that in Arizona, not in Asia.
I'm on board with the Arizona hypothesis.
And the reason why I say that is because while we see iPhone details months before they're released, we didn't see anything. There was no clue on what the new Mac Pro was going to look like.
No, when they unveiled it, it was a surprise to everyone.
Yeah, and this was June, a year and 2 months ago now, right? Same thing with Apple's WWDC announcement this year, which were all software. We hadn't seen any of that stuff leak. Right. And why is that?
Well, that's because all the people that are working on those products are direct Apple employees working in Apple facilities.
Yes. In the case of the Mac Pro, it's being built in Austin by employees that work for Apple. not even, you know, Foxconn is not operating that factory, as I understand it.
I believe you are correct.
When it comes to developing iOS 8 and OS 10 Yosemite, the engineers are all Apple employees. You remember what Tim said? He's going to double down on secrecy.
Right. And then we had the big surprise of the Mac Pro. And at WWDC, we had the surprises with the operating systems.
So I think part of doubling down on secrecy meant, first of all, increasing internal efforts on the software side to keep anything from leaking. But I think that part of that actually meant bringing in those manufacturing, bringing in manufacturing for products where it makes sense to Apple, and apparently in the U.S. Of course, Tim has also said that we are expanding our manufacturing operations in the U.S.
True. And if you're expanding in the U.S., well, now you have all those employees a lot closer to home, and it's a lot easier to manage what they do and don't say.
Yes. And then the another big thing, of course, is at the shareholder meeting in, I guess it was March or February. I forget which now, to be honest. But earlier this year at the shareholder meeting, Tim Cook said that the product that they were developing in Arizona would result in a new ecosystem.
Right. And I think that is the wearables market.
Yeah, I think it is the wearables market. But this is what it really comes down to. If Apple is going to announce the iWatch at the September 9th media event, 100% this device is being manufactured by Apple here in the United States.
I agree with you. If we see the iWatch or whatever the wearable thing is for the very first time on the 9th without any inkling of what it may be ahead of time, it's coming out of Arizona.
It's being built by Apple, and it's probably being built by Apple in the U.S., and that probably means Arizona. I kind of would rather word it that way.
I'm okay making the bold statement on that one.
Yeah, fair enough. And so again, looking back at the fact that we haven't seen any leaks, it means one of two things. Apple isn't yet building it, or Apple is building it itself, period. There are no other options. If this thing was being built in Asia, we would have had leaks because there are people willing to make money. There are too many hands that don't work for Apple involved in manufacturing Apple's products, and this is simply the way it is.
Yeah, there you go. I'm totally with you on this one. And at this point, now that we have the Recode report, I will be surprised if we don't see a wearables announcement on the 9th. And yes, I know that even as recent as last week, I was saying the wearables will be announced at a separate event. But now I'm thinking that I was wrong on that one.
I thought it would be a separate event too. I only because, first of all, I figured they needed a little bit more time on it for no particular reason. But secondly, because Apple is very good about, you know, pacing out its products, and I thought it would want to have these, you know, new iPhone form factors get their own day in the sun, and then allow the iWatch to also get its day in the sun.
And that's what I was thinking too.
Yeah, but apparently that's not going to be the case. Now, this does beg the question, though. You remember all the comments we've gotten from Apple executives about the Apple having its best product pipeline ever for the rest of this year?
Right. Where is that?
Yeah, are they talking, do they mean one new product, iWatch, along with new form factors for the iPhone, and probably updated iPads too? Or are we still going to get another new product too?
Yeah, that's a good question. And Wouldn't that be cool if they surprised us with something that no one has been expecting?
Yeah, it's probably going to be Apple TV, though. If there's another new product this year, it'll be a significantly upgraded.
Updated Apple TV, yeah. Sure. Still, it would be fun if they did a one more thing sort of thing where we're caught completely off guard. Like, do you remember when the iBook was introduced at Macworld Expo all those years ago? No one knew that AirPort was happening.
That's true.
And it wasn't until Steve was walking around stage surfing the web and he pointed out there are no wires.
Yes, that's right. And then it's like, oh yeah. Oh, he's right. Yeah, that was a cool moment. Here's my question. Really did cool. Phil really need to jump off the thingy thing onto the thingy thing?
No, I think he lost a bet and Steve was pissed off and so he had to jump off the thing.
That is probably true. All right, let's close out this section on the September 9th event with a quick observation about John Pekowski. He said, he wrote, this is like the subheading for this particular story, is start the countdown timer on whatever old-fashioned piece of junk you have on your wrist right now. I thought that was funny.
Which is?
Are you agreeing or are you asking?
No, I'm agreeing.
Okay. And then he also said, Eric Schmidt's, Google chairman and former CEO, Eric Schmidt's sense of irony evidently worse than his sense of humor. And he's quoting from a Google Plus quote from Eric Schmidt, and that quote is, playing catch up with the competition can only ever help you make incremental gains. It will never help you create something new.
Wow.
His sense of irony is evidently worse than his sense of humor. Oh, so true. Very funny, Mr. Pekowski. Well played, sir.
Yes, indeed. Oh, Google.
All right. Well, I guess that brings us to Blue's MoFi headphones.
Yeah, I was curious what you think about these. And I'm bringing this up through you now because you got a chance to play with them and you're really into quality audio and you liked these. So I wanted to know more.
So Blue Microphones is the company. They've been a mic company for, I don't know, 20 years, 25 years, 20 years this year, which isn't necessarily a long time in the mic space, and they make mics for consumers like the Yeti and the Nessie. The Nessie's a really dynamite microphone. But where they got started was at the high end for studio recording mics. So you know they make mics that cost like $10,000, and they tend to be well regarded. They've carved out a very successful niche for themselves, and now they're bringing that expertise, experience to bear on the headphone market. And of course, you know, headphones really are just sort of a reverse microphone.
Right.
Or speaker is a reverse microphone, really.
Okay. See, and this is why I like when you talk about stuff like this, because I get things backwards and you fix me.
You thought that a microphone was a reverse microphone?
No, when you said it backwards, my mind totally accepted that, even though it was wrong. Ah. And I would have continued forward with that.
Well, the headphones are a reverse microphone, but that's a subset of speakers. That's all I meant.
Okay.
So anyway, pedantry aside, there's multiple things about these headphones that make them interesting. First of all, there's the physical construction of them. And, you know, most headphones have a single band and it's some form of spring loaded tension that keeps it pressed to your head. And that tension actually has a couple problems. One, springs can wear out. and two, they tend to have an optimal point where they work best, and to where, you know, in terms of stress on the device. And when you lengthen or shorten them by adjusting the ear cups, you change that focal point away from its optimal placement.
Okay.
The MoFi, which is what these headphones are called, it's MO-FI, don't have a single headband. They have a bar across the top, and there's two hinges. What they're doing is this four bar linkage system that is, they say, was inspired by Formula One suspensions on Formula One racing cars. And so it's got
the... Which, of course, are designed to fit around your head.
Exactly. So it's got this bar across the top, and it's got these two hinges. And then there's these truss rods that are part of the four bar system that further control tension as the headphones open and close. And you can adjust it. There's a little knob. A little dial, actually, on the top that you can where you can adjust the tension for, you know, your bigger or smaller head.
Okay, so these headphones are designed so that they better conform to your head, so that the speakers in the headphones are positioned optimally, so you get the sound that Blue intends you to hear.
Yes, and another part of that is that rather than the ear cup sliding on the headband itself, they actually are suspended from the four bar linkage system on a pivoting arm. So it's like an elbow, or actually it's more like a dog's knee because it's backwards.
Okay.
Well, it just depends on which way you look. I mean, that's irrelevant. I'm digressing.
From a dog's perspective, it's forwards.
But correct.
Continue.
And so rather than sliding the headphones up and down, you actually pivot them up and down from this elbow. So that means that adjusting the ear cups has no effect on the four bar linkage system that is controlling the tension on how they grip your head, allowing them to be insanely comfortable. And they've got these really thick pads that not only serve to be extraordinarily comfortable, but also serve to form a great seal so that you get noise isolation.
Nice.
Yeah, it is really nice. I wrote in the piece, and I know that I told you this, Jeff, when I first put these things on my head, I felt safe. It's the weirdest thing for me to say, but it's the truth. I felt safe.
Well, another word you've brought up is swaddled. And so that totally makes sense. You would feel safe because swaddling, unless you're like really claustrophobic, has a way of making you feel safe.
Yeah, exactly. I do think it is related to swaddling. I'm the kind of person that I like to, when I sleep, I like it to be as cold as possible so that I can have as many blankets on me as possible. And I know that that's swaddling related. So I don't know, whatever is causing it. Even sitting in my house, I just feel super comfortable and relaxed when I have these headphones on. I have a particularly noisy Starbucks that's open late. That's in my neck of the woods. And it's frenetic. It's very unsettled. It's not calm. I don't actually like the environment in there, but they're open really late. And when I'm working on my novel, I like to be able to write late into the night.
That's the Starbucks you took me to, right?
No.
Okay.
That one actually is a lot less busy, and okay. has a much more regular clientele.
All right, because I was thinking if that was like crazy frenetic, then we need to get something in you to mellow you out a little bit.
No, this other one is probably I don't know, ten times as unsettled and frenetic as that one. So whatever. The point is this: when I've sat and I've tried to work in there, you know, I'm kind of bothered by all the activity and noise that's around me, even when I have headphones that sound great, which is usually my Vmoda Crossfade 100s, mm-hmm. Crossfade M100s. I tell you, sitting there with these things on, felt better. True story.
Wow.
Can't explain it, but it's true.
That says a lot right there.
All right. So that's the way they feel. They look really cool. They look all like space AGU. You know, you may feel like, strapping them onto your head is going to like pop up some kind of HUD in front of you or something like that. Some people will like it. Some people won't. It's, you know, subjective. They sound great, but they're flat.
And that's going to be a problem for some people, I'm sure.
Yes.
But I bet there's a reason why they're flat.
Yes, there is. And you are such a good spoon feeder. They're flat because they're aimed at audiophiles and musicians, especially musicians who are producing music, and especially musicians who are producing music on the go. So they have a nominally flat response from 10 hertz to, I'm sorry, 15 hertz to 20 kilohertz. And what that means is they're not doing any digital signal processing across that the entire range of the and the drivers, by the way, are 50 millimeter drivers. That's about as big as you get on headphones. And so what you hear is what the source material is giving you. That's what flat means. That's really important to people who are mixing music and recording music, because you need to hear what's there, not what the final product's going to be.
Totally makes sense.
It is important to audiophiles because audiophiles tend to want to hear the source material as it was intended to be heard. Now, it's going to be a little bit different for everybody. I consider myself a little bit of an audiophile, but quite frankly, my Crossfade M100s sound better when I'm just listening. Well, if I want to just sit down and listen to music, because they've got more of a tuned frequency response. The bass is boosted without it becoming muddy and nasty.
Okay.
And the MoFis don't do this. They're even. It's really well balanced. Everything is crisp and clear. It is a very good sound. And they do that in part by having a built-in amplifier. And the company calls it an audiophile amplifier. They're stressing that it's really high quality analog components. And what this serves to do is play things louder than, say, your iPhone or your Android device can.
Okay.
And that can make things sound better. It can. And related to this, it's got an onboard battery that gives you 12 hours of listening. I actually have gotten 13 out of my first couple of charges. And it has a three-position switch off, which works even when the battery's dead.
Mm-hmm.
And on. And that's important, because a lot of times, noise canceling headphones, some of them don't work when the batteries go out. The headphones are dead. Right. These will continue to work. It just won't be as loud. Then there's on, which is just its normal operating parameters, and then on plus, which gives you they boost the 60 hertz range, which is towards the bass. And they boost that by 4.5 decibels. It is still not going to compete with, say, Beats or Soul Republic's approach to this. They still don't even sound quite as tuned as my Crossfade M100s. But for those who are looking for a little more bass, it's there.
Okay, so you actually have a little versatility in them, because you can. You can listen to them with a little more bass, or you can use them essentially like studio monitors.
Yeah. And that's definitely part of their target market. Especially people, the studio monitors were, people are like mixing on the go. So you want to mix on your iPad or your laptop, or maybe even on your iPhone. You can, go from device to device, and they're all going to sound, you're going to get the same thing because of the onboard amp. So that's super important.
Oh yeah, I hadn't even thought about that, but yeah, I can see where that would be like critical important.
But I think that like straight up, just, you know, I want to chill to my music, or I want to really get into my music, or, you know, folks who want just a straight music experience and they're really into pop music, they're probably going to find another product that's more suitable to them, especially at $350, which is how much these cost.
Sure. But you know, the real deal there is that not every product is the right one for every person.
Correct. Yeah. Audiophiles and musicians are the target market here. Not folks who want to jam out to Jay-Z and Dr. Dre.
Yo.
So there you have it. Anyway, I like these things. I like them a lot.
Awesome. I'll have to hunt down a pair somewhere so I can try them out.
I'll bring them with me next time we see each other, which is
awesome. You
know, like, we don't often get to cross the glass here in the recording studio.
I know. When's that court order going to be lifted?
Don't ask.
Yeah, I know. All right. Well, that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And hey, thanks for listening.
Indeed. And please note that our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for us. And that is all for this week.
And as always, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.